Macmillan Audio presents Chapter House Dune by Frank Herbert. Read for you by Scott Brick, Catherine Kellgren, Ewan Morton, and Simon Vance.
Those who would repeat the past must control the teaching of history. Bene Gesserit Coda.
When the Gola baby was delivered from the first Bene Gesserit axolotl tank, Mother Superior Darwi O'Drade ordered a quiet celebration in her private dining room atop Central. It was barely dawn, and the two other members of her council, Tamerlane and Balonda, showed impatience at the summons, even though O'Drade had ordered breakfast served by her personal chef. "It isn't every woman who can preside at the birth of her own father," O'Drade quipped, when the others complained they had too many demands on their time to permit of time-wasting nonsense. Only aged Tamerlane showed sly amusement. Balonda held her over-fleshed features expressionless, often her equivalent of a scowl. Was it possible, O'Drade wondered, that Belle had not exorcised resentment of the relative opulence in Mother Superior's surroundings? O'Drade's quarters were a distinct mark of her position, but the distinction represented her duties more than any elevation over her sisters. The small dining room allowed her to consult aides during meals. Belonda glanced this way and that, obviously impatient to be gone. Much effort had been expended without success in attempts to break through Belonda's coldly remote shell. "It felt very odd to hold that baby in my arms and think, 'This is my father,'" O'Drade said.
"I heard you the first time,"
Belonda spoke from the belly, almost a baritone rumbling, as though each word caused her vague indigestion. She understood O'Drade's wry jest, though. The old Bashar Miles Teg had indeed been the Mother Superior's father, and O'Drade herself had collected cells as fingernail scrapings to grow this new Gola, part of a long-time possibility plan, should they ever succeed in duplicating Tleilaxu tanks. But Belonda would be drummed out of the Bene Gesserit rather than go along with O'Drade's comment on the sisterhood's vital equipment.
"I find this frivolous at such a time," Belonda said. "Those mad women hunting us to exterminate us, and you want a celebration."
O'Drade held herself to a mild tone with some effort. "If the honored Matres find us before we are ready, perhaps it will be because we failed to keep up our morale." Belonda's silent stare directly into O'Drade's eyes carried frustrating accusation. "Those terrible women already have exterminated 16 of our planets." O'Drade knew it was wrong to think of those planets as Bene Gesserit possessions, the loosely organized confederation of planetary governments assembled after the famine times and the scattering depended heavily on the sisterhood for vital services and reliable communications, but old factions persisted. Choam, Spacing Guild, Tleilaxu, remnant pockets of the divided gods' priesthood, even fish speaker auxiliaries and schismatic assemblages. The divided god had bequeathed humankind a divided empire, all of whose factions were suddenly moot because of rampaging honored Matre assaults from the scattering. The Bene Gesserit, holding to most of their old forms, were the natural prime target for attack. Belonda's thoughts never strayed far from this honored Matre threat. It was a weakness O'Drade recognized. Sometimes O'Drade hesitated on the point of replacing Belonda, but even in the Bene Gesserit there were factions these days, and no one could deny that Bell was a supreme organizer. Archives had never been more efficient than under her guidance. As she frequently did, Belonda, without even speaking the words, managed to focus Mother Superior's attention on the hunters who stalked them with savage persistence. It spoiled the mood of quiet success O'Drade had hoped to achieve this morning. She forced herself to think of the new Gola, Teg. If his original memories could be restored, the sisterhood once more would have the finest Basha ever to serve them. A Mentat Basha. A military genius whose prowess already was the stuff of myths in the old empire. But would even Teg be of use against these women returned from the scattering?
By whatever gods may be, the honored Matres must not find us. Not yet.
Teg represented too many disturbing unknowns and possibilities. Mystery surrounded the period before his death in the destruction of Dune.
He did something on Gamu to ignite the unbridled fury of the honored Matres. His suicidal stand on Dune should not have been enough to bring this berserk response.
There were rumors, bits and pieces from his days on Gamu before the Dune disaster.
He could move too fast for the human eye to see.
Had he done that? Another outcropping of wild abilities in Atreides' genes? Mutation? Or just more of the Teg myth? The Sisterhood had to learn as soon as possible. An acolyte brought in three breakfasts, and the sisters ate quickly, as though this interruption must be put behind them without delay, because time wasted was dangerous. Even after the others had gone, Odraid was left with the aftershock of Belonda's unspoken fears.
And my fears.
She rose and went to the wide window that looked across lower rooftops to part of the ring of orchards and pastures around Central. Late spring and already fruit beginning to form out there.
Rebirth. A new Teg was born today.
No feeling of elation accompanied the thought. Usually she found the view restorative, but not this morning.
What are my real strengths? What are my facts?
The resources at a Mother Superior's command were formidable. Profound loyalty in those who served her. A military arm under a Teg-trained Basha, far away now with a large portion of their troops guarding the school planet, Lampadas. Artisans and technicians, spies and agents throughout the old empire, countless workers who looked to the Sisterhood to protect them from honored Matres, and all the reverent mothers with other memories reaching into the dawn of life. Odraid knew without false pride that she represented the peak of what was strongest in a reverent mother. If her personal memories did not provide needed information, she had others around her to fill the gaps. Machine-stored data as well, although she admitted to a native distrust of it. Odraid found herself tempted to go digging in those other lives she carried as secondary memory, these subterranean layers of awareness. Perhaps she could find brilliant solutions to their predicament in experiences of others. Dangerous. You could lose yourself for hours, fascinated by the multiplicity of human variations. Better to leave other memories balanced in there, ready on demand or intruding out of necessity. Consciousness. That was the fulcrum and her grip on identity. Duncan Idaho's odd Mentat metaphor helped. Self-awareness, facing mirrors that pass through the universe, gathering new images on the way, endlessly reflexive. The infinite seen as finite, the analogue of consciousness carrying the sensed bits of infinity. She had never heard words come closer to her wordless awareness. Specialized complexity, Idaho called it. We gather, assemble, and reflect our systems of order. Indeed, it was the Bene Gesserit view that humans were life designed by evolution to create order.
And how does that help us against these disorderly women who hunt us? What branch of evolution are they? Is evolution just another name for God?
Her sisters would sneer at such bootless speculation. Still, there might be answers in other memory.
Ah, how seductive.
How desperately she wanted to project her beleaguered self into past identities and feel what it had been to live then. The immediate peril of this enticement chilled her. She felt other memory crowding the edges of awareness.
It was like this. No, it was more like this.
How greedy they were. You had to pick and choose, discreetly animating the past. And was that not the purpose of consciousness, the very essence of being alive?
Select from the past and match it against the present. Learn consequences.
That was the Bene Gesserit view of history. Ancient Santayana's words resonating in their lives. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. the buildings of Central itself, this most powerful of all Bene Gesserit establishments, reflected that attitude wherever Odraid turned. Usiform, that was the commanding concept. Little about any Bene Gesserit working centre was allowed to become non-functional, preserved out of nostalgia. The Sisterhood had no need for archaeologists. Reverend Mothers embodied history. Slowly, much slower than usual, the view out her high window produced its calming effect. What her eyes reported, that was Bene Gesserit order. But Honored Matres could end that order in the next instant. The Sisterhood's situation was far worse than what they had suffered under the tyrant. Many of the decisions she was forced to make now were odious. Her workroom was less agreeable because of actions taken here. Write off our Bene Gesserit keep on Palma. That suggestion was in Belonda's morning report waiting on the work table. Odraid fixed an affirmative notation to it. Yes, write it off because Honored Matre attack is imminent and we cannot defend them or evacuate them. 1100 Reverend Mothers, and the fates alone knew how many acolytes, postulants, and others dead or worse because of that one word. Not to mention all the ordinary lives existing in the Bene Gesserit shadow. The strain of such decisions produced a new kind of weariness in Odraid. Was it a weariness of the soul? Did such a thing as a soul exist? She felt deep fatigue where consciousness could not probe. Weary, weary, weary. Even Belonda showed the strain, and Bell feasted on violence. Tamerlane alone appeared above it, but that did not fool Odraid. Tam had entered the age of superior observation that lay ahead of all sisters if they survived into it. Nothing mattered then except observations and judgments. Most of this was never uttered except in fleeting expressions on wrinkled features. Tamerlane spoke few words these days, her comments so sparse as to be almost ludicrous.
Buy more no-ships. Brief Shiana. Review Idaho records. Ask Mabella.
Sometimes only grunts issued from her, as though words might betray her. And always the hunters roamed out there, sweeping space for any clue to the location of Chapter House. In her most private thoughts, Odraid saw the no-ships of Honored Matres as corsairs on those infinite seas between the stars. They flew no black flags with skull and crossbones, but that flag was there, nonetheless. Nothing whatsoever romantic about them.
Kill and pillage. Amass your wealth in the blood of others. Drain that energy and build your killer no-ships on ways lubricated with blood.
And they did not see they would drown in red lubricant if they kept on this course.
There must be furious people out there in that human scattering where Honored Matres originated. People who live out their lives with a single fixed idea. Get them.
It was a dangerous universe where such ideas were allowed to float around freely. Good civilizations took care that such ideas did not gain energy, did not even get a chance for birth. When they did occur, by chance or accident, they were to be diverted quickly because they tended to gather mass. Odraid was astonished that the Honored Matres did not see this, or, seeing it, ignored it.
Full-blown hysterics, Tamerlane called them. Xenophobia,
Belonda disagreed, always correcting, as though control of archives gave her a better hold on reality. Both were right, Odraid thought. The Honored Matres behaved hysterically. All outsiders were the enemy. The only people they appeared to trust were the men they sexually enslaved, and those only to a limited degree. Constantly testing, according to Mabella, our only captive Honored Matre, to see if their hold was firm.
Sometimes, out of mere pique, they may eliminate someone just as an example to others.
Mabella's words, and they forced the question, are they making an example of us?
See, this is what happens to those who dare oppose us.
Mabella had said,
you've aroused them. Once aroused, they will not desist until they have destroyed you. Get the outsiders.
Singularly direct. A weakness in them if we play it right, Odrade thought. Xenophobia carried to a ridiculous extreme? Quite possibly. Odrade pounded a fist on her work table, aware that the action would be seen and recorded by sisters who kept constant watch on Mother Superior's behaviour. She spoke aloud then for the omnipresent Comeyes and watchdog sisters behind them. We will not sit and wait in defensive enclaves. We've become as fat as Belonda, and let her fret over that, thinking we've created an untouchable society and enduring structures. Odrade swept her gaze around the familiar room. This place is one of our weaknesses. She took her seat behind the work table, thinking, of all things, about architecture and community planning. Well, that was a Mother Superior's right. Sisterhood communities seldom grew at random, even when they took over existing structures, as they had with the old Harkonnen Keep on Gamu. They did so with rebuilding plans. They wanted pneumotubes to shunt small packages and messages, light lines and hard ray projectors to transmit encrypted words. They considered themselves masters at safeguarding communications. Acolyte and Reverend Mother couriers, committed to self-destruction rather than betray their superiors, carried the more important messages. She could visualize it out there beyond her window and beyond this planet, her web, superbly organized and manned, each Bene Gesserit an extension of the others. Where sisterhood survival was concerned, there was an untouchable core of loyalty. Backsliders there might be, some spectacular, as the Lady Jessica, grandmother of the tyrant, but they slid only so far. Most upsets were temporary. And all of that was a Bene Gesserit pattern, a weakness. Odrade admitted a deep agreement with Belonda's fears. But I'll be damned if I allow such things to depress all joy of living. That would be giving in to the very thing those rampaging on Admatres wanted. It's our strengths the hunters want, Odrade said, looking up at the ceiling Comeyes, like ancient savages eating the hearts of enemies. Well, we will give them something to eat, all right, and they will not know until too late that they cannot digest it. Except for preliminary teachings tailored to acolytes and postulants, the sisterhood did not go in much for admonitory sayings. But Odrade had her own private watchwords. Someone has to do the ploughing. She smiled to herself as she bent to her work much refreshed. This room, this sisterhood, these were her garden, and there were weeds to be removed, seeds to plant. And fertilizer. Mustn't forget the fertilizer.
When I set out to lead humanity along my golden path, I promised a lesson their bones would remember. I know a profound pattern humans deny with words even while their actions affirm it. They say they seek security and quiet, conditions they call peace. Even as they speak, they create seeds of turmoil and violence. Leda II, the God Emperor.
So she calls me Spider Queen. Great Honored Matra leaned back in a heavy chair set high on a dais. Her withered breast shook with silent chuckles. She knows what will happen when I get her in my web. Suck her dry, that's what I'll do. A small woman with unremarkable features and muscles that twitched nervously, she looked down on the skylighted yellow tile floor of her audience room. A Bene Gesserit Reverend Mother sprawled there in Shigawire bindings. The captive made no attempt to struggle. Shigawire was excellent for this purpose. Cut her arms off, it would. The chamber where she sat suited Great Honored Matra as much for its dimensions as for the fact that it had been taken from others. 300 meters square, it had been designed for convocations of guild navigators here on Junction, each navigator in a monstrous tank. The captive on that yellow floor was a moat in immensity. This weakling took too much joy in revealing what her so-called superior named me. But it was still a lovely morning, great honored Matra thought, except that no tortures or mental probes worked on these witches. How could you torture someone who might choose to die at any moment, and did? They had ways of suppressing pain, too. Very wily, these primitives. She's loaded with sheer, too. A body infused with that damnable drug deteriorated beyond the reach of probes before it could be examined adequately. Great Honored Matra signalled an aide. That one nudged the sprawled Reverend Mother with a foot, and at a further signal eased the sugar wire bindings to allow minimal movement. "What is your name, child?" Great Honored Matra asked, her voice rasped hoarsely with age and false bonhomie. "I am called Sabanda." Clear young voice, still untouched by the pain of probings. "Would you like to watch us capture a weak male and enslave him?" Great Honored Matra asked. Sabanda knew the proper response to this. They had been warned. "I will die first." She said it calmly, staring up at that ancient face, the colour of a dried root left too long in the sun. Those odd orange flecks in the crone's eyes. A sign of anger, proctors had told her. A loosely hung red-gold robe with black dragon figures down its open face and red leotards beneath it only emphasized the scrawny figure they covered. Great Honored Matra did not change expression, even with a recurrent thought about these witches. Damn them. "What was your task on that dirty little planet where we took you?"
"A teacher of the young."
"I'm afraid we didn't leave any of your young alive." Now why does she smile? To offend me, that's why. "Did you teach your young ones to worship the witch Shiana?" Great Honored Matra asked.
"Why should I teach them to worship a sister? Shiana would not like that."
"Would not? Are you saying she has come back to life and you know her?
Is it only the living we know?"
How clear and fearless the voice of this young witch. They had remarkable self-control, but even that could not save them. Although, how this cult of Shiana persisted, it would have to be rooted out, of course, destroyed the way the witches themselves were being destroyed. Great Honored Matra lifted a little finger of her right hand. A waiting aide approached the captive with an injection. Perhaps this new drug would free a witch's tongue, perhaps not. No matter. Sabanda grimaced when the injector touched her neck. In seconds, she was dead. Servants carried the body away. It would be fed to captive futars. Not that futars were much use. Wouldn't breed in captivity. Wouldn't obey their most ordinary commands. Sullen, waiting. "Where handlers?" one might ask, or other useless words would spill from their humanoid mouths. Still, futars provided some pleasures. Captivity also demonstrated they were vulnerable, just as these primitive witches were. "We'll find the witch's hiding place. It's only a matter of time."
The person who takes the banal and ordinary and illuminates it in a new way can terrify. We do not want our ideas changed. We feel threatened by such demands. "I already know the important things," we say. Then Changer comes and throws our old ideas away. The Zen Sufi Master.
Miles Tegg enjoyed playing in the orchards around Central. O'Drade had first taken him here when he could just toddle. One of his earliest memories, hardly more than 2 years old and already aware he was a Golar, though he did not understand the word's full meaning. "You are a special child," O'Drade said. "We made you from cells taken from a very old man." Although he was a precocious child, and her words had a vaguely disturbing sound, he was more interested then in running through tall summer grass beneath the trees. Later, he added other orchard days to that first one, accumulating as well impressions about Odraid and the others who taught him. He recognized quite early that Odraid enjoyed the excursions as much as he did. One afternoon in his fourth year, he told her, "Spring is my favorite time."
"Mine too."
When he was seven, and already showing the mental brilliance coupled to holographic memory that had caused the Sisterhood to place such heavy responsibilities on his previous incarnation, he suddenly saw the orchards as a place touching something deep inside him. This was his first real awareness that he carried memories he could not recall. Deeply disturbed, he turned to Odraid, who stood outlined in light against the afternoon sun, and said, "There are things I can't remember."
"One day you will remember," she said.
He could not see her face against the bright light, and her words came from a great shadow place, as much within him as from Odraid. That year he began studying the life of the Basher Miles Teg, whose cells had started his new life. Odraid had explained some of this to him, holding up her fingernails.
"I took tiny scrapings from his neck, cells of his skin, and they held all we needed to bring you to life."
There was something intense about the orchards that year. Fruit, larger and heavier. Bees, almost frenetic.
"It's because of the desert growing larger down there in the south," Odraid said.
She held his hand as they walked through a dew-fresh morning beneath burgeoning apple trees. Teg stared southward through the trees, momentarily mesmerized by leaf-dappled sunlight. He had studied about the desert, and he thought he could feel the weight of it on this place.
"Trees can sense their end approaching," Odraid said. "Life breeds more intensely when threatened."
"The air is very dry," he said. "That must be the desert."
"Notice how some of the leaves have gone brown and curled at the edges? We've had to irrigate heavily this year."
He liked it that she seldom talked down to him. It was mostly one person to another. He saw curled brown on leaves. The desert did that. Deep in the orchard, they listened quietly for a time to birds and insects. Bees, working the clover of a nearby pasture, came to investigate, but he was pheromone-marked, as were all who walked freely on Chapter House. They buzzed past him, sensed identifiers, and went away about their business with blossoms.
"Apples," Odraid pointed westward. "Peaches."
His attention went where she directed. And yes, there were the cherries east of them beyond the pasture. He saw resin ribbing on the limbs.
"Seeds and young shoots had been brought here on the original no ships some 1,500 years ago," she said, "and had been planted with loving care."
Teg visualized hands grubbing in dirt, gently patting earth around young shoots, careful irrigation, the fencing to confine the cattle to wild pastures around the first Chapter House plantations and buildings. By this time, he already had begun learning about the giant sandworm the Sisterhood had spirited from Rakis. Death of that worm had produced creatures called sand trout. Sand trout were why the desert grew. Some of this history touched accounts of his previous incarnation, a man they called the Basher, a great soldier who had died when terrible women called Honored Martyrs destroyed Rakis. Teg found such studies both fascinating and troubling. He sensed gaps in himself, places where memories ought to be. The gaps called out to him in dreams, and sometimes when he fell into reverie, faces appeared before him. He could almost hear words. Then there were times he knew the names of things before anyone told him, especially names of weapons. Momentous things grew in his awareness. This entire planet would become desert. A change started because Honored Matris wanted to kill these Bene Gesserit who raised him. Reverend mothers who controlled his life often awed him. Black-robed, austere, those blue-in-blue eyes with absolutely no white. The spice did that, they said. Only Odraid showed him anything he took for real affection, and Odraid was someone very important. Everyone called her Mother Superior, and that was what she told him to call her, except when they were alone in the orchards. Then he could call her Mother. On a morning walk near harvest time in his ninth year, just over the third rise in the apple orchards north of Central, they came on a shallow depression free of trees and lush with many different plants. Odraid put a hand on his shoulder and held him where they could admire black stepping stones in a meander track through massed greenery and tiny flowers. She was in an odd mood. He heard it in her voice. "Ownership is an interesting question," she said. "Do we own this planet, or does it own us?" "I like the smells here," he said. She released him and urged him gently ahead of her. "We planted for the nose here, Miles. Aromatic herbs. Study them carefully and look them up when you get back to the library. Oh, do step on them," when he started to avoid a plant runner in his path. He placed his right foot firmly on green tendrils and inhaled pungent odours. "They were made to be walked on and give up their savour," Odraid said. "Proctors have been teaching you how to deal with nostalgia. Have they told you nostalgia often is driven by the sense of smell?" "Yes, Mother." Turning to look back at where he had stepped, he said, "That's Rosemary." "How do you know?" Very intense. He shrugged. "I just know." "That may be an original memory," she sounded pleased. As they continued their walk in the aromatic hollow, Odraid's voice once more became pensive. "Each planet has its own character, where we draw patterns of old Earth. Sometimes it's only a faint sketch, but here we have succeeded." She knelt and pulled a twig from an acid green plant. Crushing it in her fingers, she held it to his nose. "Sage." She was right, but he could not say how he knew. "I've smelled that in food. Is that like melange?" "It improves flavour but won't change consciousness." She stood and looked down at him from her full height. "Mark this place well, Miles. Our ancestral worlds are gone, but here we have recaptured part of our origins." He sensed she was teaching him something important. He asked Odraid, "Why did you wonder if this planet owned us?" "My sisterhood believes we are stewards of the land. Do you know about stewards?" "Like Reutero, my friend Yorgi's father. Yorgi says his older sister will be steward of their plantation someday." "Correct. We have a longer residence on some planets than any other people we know of, but we are only stewards." "If you don't own Chapter House, who does?" "Perhaps nobody. My question is, how have we marked each other, my sisterhood, and this planet?" He looked up at her face and down at his hands. Was Chapter House marking him right now? "Most of the marks are deep inside us." She took his hand. "Come along." They left the aromatic dell and climbed up into Reutero's domain, Odraid speaking as they went. "The sisterhood seldom creates botanical gardens," she said. "Gardens must support far more than eyes and nose."
"Food?"
"Yes. Supportive first of our lives. Gardens produce food. That dell back there is harvested for our kitchens."
He felt her words flow into him, lodging there among the gaps. He sensed planning for centuries ahead, trees to replace building beams, to hold watersheds, plants to keep lake and riverbanks from crumbling, to hold topsoil safe from rain and wind, to maintain seashores, and even in the waters, to make places for fish to breed. The Bene Gesserit also thought of trees for shade and shelter, or to cast interesting shadows on lawns.
"Trees and other plants for all of our symbiotic relationships," she said.
Symbiotic? It was a new word.
She explained with something she knew he already had encountered, going out with others to harvest mushrooms. "Fungi won't grow except in the company of friendly roots. Each has a symbiotic relationship with a special plant. Each growing thing takes something it needs from the other."
She went on at length, and bored with learning, he kicked a clump of grass, then saw how she stared at him in that disturbing way. Had he done something offensive? Why was it right to step on one growing thing and not on another?
"Miles, grass keeps the wind from carrying topsoil into difficult places such as the bottoms of rivers."
He knew that tone, reprimanding. He stared down at the grass he had offended.
"These grasses feed our cattle. Some have seeds we eat in bread and other foods. Some cane grasses are windbreaks."
He knew that. Trying to divert her, he said, "Windbrakes?" She did not smile, and he knew he had been wrong to think he could fool her. Resigned to it, he listened as she went on with the lesson. When the desert came, she told him, grapes, their taproots down several hundred meters, probably would be the last to go. Orchards would die first. Why do they have to die? To make room for more important life. Sandworms and melange. He saw he had pleased her by knowing the relationship between sandworms and the spice the Bene Gesserit needed for their existence. He was not sure how that need worked, but he imagined a circle. Sandworms to sand trout, to melange and back again. And the Bene Gesserit took what they needed from the circle. He was still tired of all this teaching and asked, if all these things are going to die anyway, why do I have to go back to the library and learn their names? Because you're human, and humans have this deep desire to classify, to apply labels to everything. Why do we have to name things like that? Because that way we lay claim to what we name. We assume an ownership that can be misleading and dangerous. So she was back on ownership. My street, my lake, my planet, she said. My label forever. A label you give to a place or thing may not even last out your lifetime except as a polite sop granted by conquerors or as a sound to remember in fear. Dune, he said. You are quick. Honored matters burn dune. They'll do the same to us if they find us. Not if I'm your basher. The words were out of him without thought, but once spoken, he felt they might have some truth. Library accounts said the basher had made enemies tremble just by appearing on a battlefield. And though she knew what he was thinking, O'Drade said, the basher Teg was just as famous for creating situations where no battle was necessary. But he fought your enemies. Never forget Dune, Miles. He died there. I know. Do the proctors have you studying Caladan yet? Yes. It's called Dan in my histories. Labels, Miles. Names are interesting reminders, but most people don't make other connections. Boring history, eh? Names. Convenient pointers. Useful mostly with your own kind. Are you my kind? It was a question that plagued him, but not in those words until this instant. We are Atreides, you and I. Remember that when you return to your study of Caladan. When they went back through the orchards and across a pasture to the vantage knoll with its limbed framed view of Central, Teg saw the administrative complex and its barrier plantations with new sensitivity. He held this close as they went down the fenced lane to the arch into First Street. A living jewel, O'Drade called Central. As they passed under it, he looked up at the street name burned into the entrance arch. Galach in an elegant script with flowing lines, Bene Gesserit decorative. All streets and buildings were labelled in that same cursive. Looking around him at Central, a dancing fountain in the square ahead of them, the elegant details, he sensed a depth of human experience. The Bene Gesserit had made this place supportive in ways he did not quite fathom. Things picked up in studies and orchard excursions, simple things and complex, came to new focus. It was a latent mentat response, but he did not know this, only sensing that his unfailing memory had shifted some relationships and reorganized them. He stopped suddenly and looked back the way they had come. The orchard out there framed in the arch of the covered street. It was all related. Central's effluent produced methane in fertilizer. He had toured the plant with a proctor. Methane ran pumps and powered some of the refrigeration. What are you looking at, Miles? He did not know how to answer, but he remembered an autumn afternoon when O'Drade had taken him over Central in a thopter to tell him about these relationships and give him the overview. Only words then, but now the words had meaning. As near to a closed ecological circle as we can create, O'Drade had said in the thopter. Weather controls, orbiters, monitor it, and order the flow lines. Why are you standing there looking at the orchard, Miles? Her voice was full of imperatives against which he had no defenses. In the ornithopter, you said it was beautiful but dangerous. They had only taken one thopter trip together.
She caught the reference immediately.
The ecological circle.
He turned and looked up at her, waiting.
Enclosed, she said. How tempting it is to raise high walls and keep out change. Rot here in our own self-satisfied comfort.
Her words filled him with disquiet. He felt he had heard them before. Some other place, with a different woman holding his hand.
Enclosures of any kind are a fertile breeding ground for hatred of outsiders, she said. That produces a bitter harvest.
Not exactly the same words, but the same lesson. He walked slowly beside O'Drade, his hand sweaty in hers.
Why are you so silent, Miles?
You're farmers, he said. That's really what you Bene Gesserit do. She saw immediately what had happened. Mentat training coming out in him without his knowing. Best not explore that yet.
We are concerned about everything that grows, Miles. It was perceptive of you to see this.
As they parted, she to return to her tower, he to his quarters in the school section, O'Drade said,
I will tell your proctors to place more emphasis on subtle uses of power.
He misunderstood. I'm already training with laser guns. They say I'm very good.
So I've heard. But there are weapons you cannot hold in your hands. You can only hold them in your mind.
Rules build up fortifications behind which small minds create satrapies. A perilous state of affairs in the best of times, disastrous during crises. Bene Gesserit Coda.
Stygian blackness in Great Honored Matre's sleeping chamber. Lonio, a grand dame and senior aide to the High One, entered from the unlightened hallway as she had been summoned to do, and, seeing darkness, shuddered. These consultations, with no illumination, terrified her, and she knew Great Honored Matre took pleasure from that. It could not be the only reason for darkness, though. Was Great Honored Matre fearful of attack? Several High Ones had been deposed in bed. No. Not just that, although it might bear on the choice of settings. Grunts and moans in the darkness. Some Honored Matres snickered and said Great Honored Matre dared bed a futar. Lonio thought it possible. This Great Honored Matre dared many things. Had she not salvaged some of the weapons from the disaster of the scattering? Futars, though? The sisters knew futars could not be bonded by sex, at least not by sex with humans. That might be the way the enemies of many faces did it, though. Who knew? There was a furry smell in the bedchamber. Lonio closed the door behind her and waited. Great Honored Matre did not like to be interrupted in whatever she did there within shielding blackness.
But she permits me to call her Dama.
Another moan then.
Sit on the floor, Lonio. Yes, there by the door.
Does she really see me, or only guess?
Lonio did not have the courage to test it.
Poison. I'll get her that way some day. She's cautious, but she can be distracted.
Although her sisters might sneer at it, poison was an accepted tool of succession, provided the successor possessed further ways to maintain ascendancy.
Lonio, those Ixians you spoke with today, what do they say of the weapon?
They do not understand its function, Dama. I did not tell them what it was.
Of course not. Will you suggest again that weapon and charge be united? Are you sneering at me, Lonio?
Dama, I would never do such a thing.
I hope not.
Silence. Lonio understood that they both considered the same problem. Only 300 units of the weapon survived the disaster. Each could be used only once, provided the council, which held the charge, agreed to arm them. Great Honored Matre, controlling the weapon itself, had only half of that awful power. Weapon without charge was merely a small black tube that could be held in the hand. With its charge, it cut a brief swath of bloodless death across the arc of its limited range.
The once off many faces,
Great Honored Matre muttered. Lonyo nodded to the darkness where that muttering originated.
Perhaps she can see me? I do not know what else she salvaged or what the Ixians may have provided her.
And the ones of many faces, curse them through eternity, had caused the disaster, them and their futars. The ease with which all but that handful of the weapon had been confiscated, awesome powers.
We must arm ourselves well before we return to that battle. Dharma is right.
That planet, Buzal, Great Honored Matre said, are you sure it's not defended?
We detect no defenses. Smugglers say it is not defended. But it is so rich in soulstones. Here in the Old Empire, people seldom dare attack the witches. I do not believe there are only a handful of them on that planet. It's a trap of some kind.
That is always possible, Dharma. I do not trust smugglers, Lonyo. Bond a few more of them and test this thing of Buzal again. The witches may be weak, but I do not think they are stupid.
Yes, Dharma.
Tell the Ixians they will displease us if they cannot duplicate the weapon.
But without the charge, Dharma, we will deal with that when we must. Now leave.
Lonyo heard a hissing, yes, as she let herself out. Even the darkness of the hallway was welcome after the bedchamber, and she hurried toward the light.
We tend to become like the worst in those we oppose. Bene Gesserit Coda.
The water images again. We're turning this whole damned planet into a desert, and I get water images.
Odraid sat in her workroom, the usual morning clutter around her, and sensed Sea Child floating in the waves, washed by them. The waves were the colour of blood. Her Sea Child self anticipated bloody times. She knew where these images originated, the time before Reverend Mothers ruled her life. Childhood in the beautiful home on the Gamu Sea Coast. Despite immediate worries, she could not prevent a smile. Oysters prepared by Papa, the stew she still preferred. What she remembered best of childhood was the sea excursions. Something about being afloat spoke to her most basic self. Lift and fall of waves, the sense of unbounded horizons with strange new places just beyond the curved limits of a watery world, that thrilling edge of danger implicit in the very substance that supported her. All of it combined to assure her she was Sea Child. Papa was calmer there too, and Mama Sibia happier, face turned into the wind, dark hair blowing. A sense of balance radiated from those times, a reassuring message spoken in a language older than Odraid's oldest other memory.
This is my place, my medium. I am Sea Child.
Her personal concept of sanity came from those times.
The ability to balance on strange seas, the ability to maintain your deepest self despite unexpected waves.
Mama Sibia had given Odraid that ability long before the Reverend Mothers came and took away their hidden Atreides scion. Mama Sibia, only a foster mother, had taught Odraid to love herself. In a Bene Gesserit society where any form of love was suspect, this remained Odraid's ultimate secret.
At root, I am happy with myself. I do not mind being alone.
Not that any Reverend Mother was ever truly alone after the spice agony flooded her with other memories. But Mama Sibia, and yes, Papa too, acting in loco parentis for the Bene Gesserit, had impressed a profound strength upon their charge during those hidden years. The Reverend Mothers had been reduced to amplifying that strength. Proctors had tried to root out Odraid's deep desire for personal affinities, but failed at last. Not quite sure they had failed, but always suspicious. They had sent her to Aldanab, finally, a place deliberately maintained as a mimic of the worst in Seleucia Secundus, there to be conditioned on a planet of constant testing, a place worse than Dune in some respects, high cliffs and dry gorges, hot winds and frigid winds, too little moisture, and too much. The Sisterhood had thought of it as a proving ground for those destined to survive on Dune, but none of this had touched that secret core within O'Drade. Sea Child remained intact.
And it is Sea Child warning me now.
Was it a prescient warning? She had always possessed this bit of talent, this little twitching that told of immediate peril to the Sisterhood, Atreides' genes reminding her of their presence. Was it a threat to Chapter House? No. The ache she could not touch said it was others in danger. Important, though. Lampadas? Her bit of talent could not say. The breeding mistresses had tried to erase this dangerous prescience from their Atreides line, but with limited success.
We dare not risk another Kwisatz Haderach.
They knew of this quirk in their mother superior, but O'Drade's late predecessor, Taraza, had advised cautious use of her talent. It had been Taraza's view that O'Drade's prescience worked only to warn of dangers to the Bene Gesserit. O'Drade agreed. She experienced unwanted moments when she glimpsed threats. Glimpses. And lately she dreamed. It was a vividly recurring dream, every sense attuned to the immediacy of this thing occurring in her mind. She walked across a chasm on a tightrope, and someone, she dared not turn to see who, was coming from behind with an axe to cut the rope. She could feel the rough twists of fibre beneath bare feet. She felt a cold wind blowing, a smell of burning on that wind. And she knew the one with the axe approached. Each perilous step required all of her energy. Step, step. The rope swayed, and she stretched her arms out straight on each side, struggling for balance.
If I fall, the Sisterhood falls.
The Bene Gesserit would end in the chasm beneath the rope. As with any living thing, the Sisterhood must end sometime. A reverend mother dared not deny it.
But not here. Not falling, the rope severed. We must not let the rope be cut. I must get across the chasm before the axe wielder comes. I must!
The dream always ended there, her own voice ringing in her ears as she awoke in her sleeping chamber, chilled. No perspiration. Even in the throes of nightmare, Bene Gesserit restraints did not permit unnecessary excesses.
Body does not need perspiration. Body does not get perspiration.
As she sat in her workroom, remembering the dream, O'Drade felt the depth of reality behind that metaphor of a slender rope,
the delicate strand on which I carry the fate of my sisterhood.
Sea Child sensed the approaching nightmare and intruded with images of bloody waters. This was no trivial warning. Ominous. She wanted to stand and shout,
"Scatter into the weeds, my chicks! Run, run!"
And wouldn't that shock the watchdogs? The duties of a mother superior required her to put a good face on her tremors and act as though nothing mattered except the formal decisions in front of her. Panic must be avoided. Not that any of her immediate decisions were truly trivial in these times, but calm demeanor was required. Some of her chicks already were running, gone off into the unknown, shared lives in other memory. The rest of her chicks here on Chapter House would know when to run.
When we are discovered.
Their behavior would be governed then by the necessities of the moment. All that really mattered was their superb training. That was their most reliable preparation. Each new Bene Gesserit cell, wherever it finally went, was prepared as was Chapter House, total destruction rather than submission. The screaming fire would engorge itself on precious flesh and records. All a captor would find would be useless wreckage, twisted shards peppered with ashes. Some Chapter House sisters might escape, but flight at the moment of attack? How futile. Key people shared other memory anyway. Preparation. Mother Superior avoided it.
Reasons of morale.
Where to run and who might escape? Who might be captured? Those were the real questions. What if they captured Shiana down there at the edge of the new desert, waiting for sandworms that might never appear? Shiana plus the sandworms, a potent religious force Onid Matres might know how to exploit. And what if Onid Matres captured Gola, Idaho, or Gola Teg? There might never again be a hiding place if one of those possibilities occurred. What if? What if? Angry frustration said, "Should have killed Idaho the minute we got him. We should never have grown Gola Teg." Only her council members, immediate advisers, and some among the watchdogs shared her suspicion. They sat on it with reservations. None of them felt really secure about those two Golas, not even after mining the no-ship, making it vulnerable to the screaming fire. In those last hours before his heroic sacrifice, had Teg been able to see the unseeable, including no-ships? How did he know where to meet us on that desert of dune? And if Teg could do it, the dangerously talented Duncan Idaho, with his uncounted generations of accumulated Atreides and unknown genes, might also stumble upon the ability. I might do it myself. With sudden, shocking insight, Odraid realized for the first time that Tamerlane and Balonda watched their mother superior with the same fears that Odraid felt in watching the two Golas. Merely knowing it could be done, that a human could be sensitized to detect no ships and the other forms of that shielding, would have an unbalancing effect on their universe. It would certainly set the Onid Matres on a runaway track. There were uncounted Idaho offspring loose in the universe. He had always complained he was no damned stud for the Sisterhood, but he had performed for them many times. Always thought he was doing it for himself, and maybe he was. Any mainline Atreides offspring might have this talent the council suspected had come to flower in Teg. Where did the months and years go? And the days? Another harvest season, and the Sisterhood remained in its terrible limbo. Mid-morning already, Odraid realized. The sounds and smells of Central made themselves known to her. People out there in the corridor. Chicken and cabbage cooking in the communal kitchen. Everything normal. What was normal to someone who dwelt in water images even during these working moments? Sea Child could not forget Gamo, the smells, the breeze-blown substance of ocean weeds, the ozone that made every breath oxygen-rich, and the splendid freedom in those around her so apparent in the way they walked and spoke. Conversation on the sea went deeper in a way she had never plumbed. Even small talk had its subterranean elements there, an oceanic elocution that flowed with the currents beneath them. Odraid felt compelled to remember her own body afloat in that childhood sea. She needed to recapture the forces she had known there, take in the strengthening qualities she had learned in more innocent times. Face down in salty water, holding her breath as long as she could, she floated in a sea-washed now that cleansed away woes. This was stress management reduced to its essence. A great calmness flooded her. I float, therefore I am. Sea Child warned, and Sea Child restored. Without ever admitting it, she had needed restoration desperately. Odraid had looked at her own face, mirrored in a workroom window the previous night, shocked by the way age and responsibilities combined with fatigue to suck in her cheeks and turn down the corners of her mouth. The sensual lips thinner, the gentle curves of her face elongated. Only the all-blue eyes blazed with their accustomed intensity, and she still was tall and muscular. On impulse, Odraid punched up the call symbols and stared at a projection above the table. The no-ship sitting on the ground at the Chapter House space field, a giant bump of mysterious machinery separated from time. Over the years of its semi-dormancy, it had depressed a great sunken area into the landing flat, becoming almost wedged there. It was a great lump, its engines ticking away only enough to keep it hidden from prescient searchers, especially from guild navigators who would take a special joy in selling out the Bene Gesserit. Why had she called up this image just now? Because of the three people confined there. Sytale, the last surviving Tlelaxu master, Mabella and Duncan Idaho, the sexually bonded pair, held as much by their mutual entrapment as they were by the no-ship. Not simple, any of it. There seldom were simple explanations for any major Bene Gesserit undertaking. The no-ship and its mortal contents could only be classified as a major effort, costly. Very costly in energy, even in its standby mode. The appearance of parsimonious metering to all of that expenditure spoke of energy crisis, one of Belle's concerns. You could hear it in her voice even when she was being her most objective.
Down to the bone and nowhere else to cut!
Every Bene Gesserit knew the watchful eyes of accounting were on them these days, critical of the sisterhood's outflowing vitality. Belonda strode into the workroom unannounced, with a roll of Redulian crystal records under her left arm. She walked as though she hated the floor, stamping on it as if to say, "There, take that, and that," beating the floor because it was guilty of being underfoot. Audrade felt her chest tighten as she saw the look in Belle's eyes. The Redulian records went slap as Belonda threw them onto the table.
"Lampadas,"
Belonda said, and there was agony in her voice. Audrade had no need to open the roll. Sea child's bloody water has become reality.
Survivors?
Her voice sounded strained.
None!
Belonda slumped into the chair dog as she kept on her side of Audrade's table. Tamerlane entered then and sat behind Belonda. Both looked stricken.
No survivors.
Audrade permitted herself a slow shudder that went from her breasts to the soles of her feet. She did not care that the others saw such a revealing reaction. This workroom had seen worse behavior from sisters.
Who reported?
Audrade asked.
Belonda said, "It came through Archoam's spies and had the special mark on it. The rabbi supplied the information, no doubt of it."
Audrade did not know how to respond. She glanced at the wide bow window behind her companions, seeing a soft flutter of snowflakes. Yes, this news deservedly went with winter marshalling its forces out there. The sisters of Chapter House were unhappy about the sudden plunge into winter. Necessities had forced weather control to let the temperature drop precipitately. No gradual decline into winter, no kindness to growing things that now must pass through the freezing dormancy. This was 3 and 4 degrees colder every night. Get the whole thing over in a week or so and plunge them all into the seemingly interminable chill.
Cold to match the news about Lampadas.
One result of this weather shift was fog. She could see it dissipating as the brief snow flurry ended. Very confusing weather. They got the dew point next to the air temperature and the fog rolled into the remaining wet spots. It lifted from the ground in tule mists that wander through leafless orchards like a poisonous gas.
No survivors at all.
Belonda shook her head from side to side in answer to Audrade's questioning look.
Lampadas,
a jewel in the sisterhood's network of planets, home of their most prized school, another lifeless ball of ashes and hardened melt, and the Basha Aleph Bosmali, with all of his hand-picked defense force. All